just before I begin, one of the other things I did when I left Padmaloka was go and work at Windhorse with Peter, who's here, and I know some others are at Windhorse now, Ethan and others. That was also a great experience. Peter was at that time the manager of the van sales team, which was the team with the kind of most energy, if you like, I felt, in Windhorse, and they gave me the run of going to Scotland. Anyway, it's lovely to see Peter here, and he's one of the people going to Gukiloka in April. So yes, I'm going to talk about Padmavajra. Yeah, he's my preceptor. He says I can say whatever I like. What I want to do is to make some. And in fact, I want to start with a hypothesis. I think technically it's a proposition, and then I want to spend 20 minutes or so exploring it, partly as a general thing and partly in relation to Padmavajra. So my proposition is this: our preceptor relationship can be the working ground above all others where we learn how to have a positive connection with a more spiritually experienced man. So I'll just unpack that a little bit, and why I think that might be so. Preceptor relationship. I think the spiritual life, in fact life, is all about other people and how we relate to them. And even more so in our spiritual community. Also, our preceptor is a man. And one of the things that Bhante Sangharakshita has emphasized is our connection with men, and that we are most likely to learn from other men how to be a man. I mean, that's not to say that women are not necessarily important in our lives. In fact, in our movement and order, we have some outstanding women. But you're most likely to learn how to be a man from another man or other men. And then I use this phrase, spiritually, or more spiritually experienced, or more spiritually committed, you might say. You know, so it brings in this notion, again, that Bhante talks of hierarchy. And, you know, even notions of like how we have relationships with people that we perceive as higher than ourselves, people even in authority and that kind of thing. And I think that, well, I'll go on to say something about that. And then when I say working ground above all others, I think that there is something unique about that relationship of having a preceptor. You know, it takes, your preceptor ordains you, and that takes place in a ritual, in a retreat setting, and it can never be undone. I mean, it happens. And I mean, whether you end up resigning, or even your preceptor, or you drift apart, or whatever, you know, that act has still happened. It's still there, it's still in your life. And I know that for some of my order friends, they say that that private ordination is a kind of pivotal moment in their lives, even if they don't see it like that at the time. So I, one of the things I just want to set out, if you like, in a more general sense, is this relationship with a more experienced man in the context of ordination and the kind of conditioning that we bring to that. I think this is a really important area that I think I want to talk about a little bit, partly because when you do join the order and you read chapter, and you might be quite surprised about the way in which some people talk about Bhante. Some of it, quite frankly, it can be rude. I think that it's worth having bearing in mind the conditioning that people bring to this kind of relationship. And perhaps can help us be a little bit more, a little bit forgiving of how some people relate to their preceptor. Not everyone relates to Bhante in that wonderful way that Padmavajra evoked. And I just think it's important to note that. our preceptor relationship will inevitably be conditioned by the relationships we've had in the past, especially with older and more experienced men. And I think here you can include your father, your school teachers, work managers, anyone who you might think of as being in a position of, higher or authority or anything like that. That's not to say that those relationships might have been difficult. I mean, you know, you might have a wholly positive set of relationships with older men or more experienced men in your life. But whatever they are, I mean, it's just the basic Buddhist teaching of cause and effect. Your karma, your vipakas, you will bring those into this relationship. Not only your individual relationships, I mean, there's also a whole set of collective conditionings, if you like, that you're part of as, that are just part of society. And I remember when I was training for ordination that I was introduced to some of those, or we talked about some of those on retreats. And I'll just mention, I mean, some of them are quite obvious, but I'll just mention three of the ones that came to mind when I was thinking about this. The first one is the church and God as ultimate authority. And sometimes there's a bit of working out that we have to do. Sometimes it could be your relationship with other teachers from other spiritual traditions and so on. I remember one interesting area for me was when Manju Bhadra gave me a book by Ted Hughes called The Goddess of Complete Being, which is a book about Shakespeare. But what Manju Bhadra told me, and I got from reading this book, was that the kind of a society tension going on between Protestantism and Catholicism in this country about how the relationship to the priest, essentially, and whether you needed someone in that priest role to mediate your relationship with God. I mean, this is a slight tangent, but it was just a fascinating insight into how, you know, that might play an effect in our kind of collective unconscious, if you like. Another one, which Arta Priya introduced me to, actually, when you were doing a retreat where, can't remember what the theme is, but you talked about Shackleton. And so Shackleton was an English explorer, and one of the expeditions that he made was at the time of the First World War. And what Arta Priya talked about was, or how he put it, was something like the First World War had led to some kind of break in the trust of a whole generation of young men towards generals, as of military generals and the government, because they were, you know, sent to their slaughter in a way, and if they weren't killed, they came back, many of them, psychologically shattered. And it was as though some kind of bond of trust, you know, started to break in that particular dreadful conflict. And yes, I mean, that's not just English men, is it? I mean, it's French, Belgium, German, and so on, other countries as well. A third one that we studied on retreat was, it was the counterculture revolution, so-called, in the 1960s. And I think it's in some of Subhuti's lectures in the Spiritual Friendship series. He talks about Robert Bly. And I followed one of those references up and read a book of his called The Sibling Society. And in that book, he talks about how young people kind of threw off the so-called shackles of rather dusty authority structures. But in so doing, he argues, it kind of unleashed the ego. And I found this argument quite interesting, that unleashing the ego in some way produced the society that we have today, characterized by the culture of celebrity and the kind of celebration of youth, and a kind of dismissing of older, or wisdom embodied in older people, especially older men. So anyway, I just mentioned some of those because I think we probably bring all of that collective conditioning, our own personal, you know, relationships with men into this preceptor relationship. I think we bring all of that in there. which is not to say that it need be a difficult relationship. I think it's just good to be aware of what you're bringing into it. In fact, in all likelihood, it won't. And you've got a chance in that relationship to develop an intensely positive and straightforward connection with a more experienced man. Which brings me nicely on to talking about my own preceptor, Padmavajra. So I want to make some personal reflections. They're not quite using that same analysis, if you like, of conditioning, but there is something of that in there. But what I want to do is just give you some of the ways in which I relate to Padmavajra. Obviously, every preceptor is different, and the relationship that you have with your own preceptor will be dependent on you and him. So, you know, it may not necessarily, you know, be the same as this list, as it were, or you may not even think of your preceptor or discipleship in this way. So I'll just go through these, and the first two I kind of want to do together. So the first one is as a friend. That's how I relate to him, as a friend. Friendship is something, I mean, in a way, Padmavajra gave me ordination, and I feel that friendship, he also offered me friendship, but I feel friendship is something that I can offer him as well. It's a way that I can try in my own way to give something back, if you like. And I think that friendship is very interesting in our order and the way that Bhante has set up this idea of having a preceptor, because you know, they're not a traditional guru. You know, when I go and meet Padmavajra, when we go and meet our preceptor, we don't go into a room and they're sitting on a high throne like in their Tibetan tradition. I mean, you don't always meet Tibetan teachers in that way, but you know what I mean. So he is a teacher. That's the other thing. Padmavajra, the next thing, I do see him as my teacher. And I mean that in quite a specific way, that he gave me a mantra and a visualization practice at the time of ordination. He introduced me to the 10 precepts that he mentioned. But actually, since then, there's probably only been two or three or four times in which I've asked him or he's given me a specific dharmic teaching. I mean, I've learned from him dharmically in lots and lots of ways, just by sitting, listening to him give talks and having chats and so on. But in terms of specific dharma, you know, I haven't asked for many more teachings. I mean, we've got so many from Bhante in a way. But what I find interesting is like that relationship for having someone who is a teacher and someone who's a friend. I think that's a very interesting balance, if you like. That someone can be a friend and a teacher. There's definitely, I see him, I relate to him on our hierarchical level, that I acknowledge his experience of the Dharma, I acknowledge him as Bhante's disciple, and I see him as a friend as well. And I think that the sort of the balancing, or even tension might give the wrong sort of impression, but something in that working out how I relate to him has matured me over the last 7 years, well, beyond that, 10 years since I've been at Padmaloka. So I do just want to say, use the word disciple as well, because I do think of myself as a disciple of his, and I like that, to use that word, and it gives me a connection with Bhante, because he definitely sees himself as Bhante's disciple, and I definitely see myself as his disciple. At the same time, I know Padmavajra alluded to this, that for some people, disciple can have some connotations which can be a little bit unhelpful. Maybe it can feel like you lose a sense of your own free will or individuality. And I want to say that I have never experienced that. Now, that might be partly my own psychology, but I definitely feel like I'm my own man, and also I'll listen to what he says. The next thing is as someone who I am loyal to. I mean, we take this vow at ordination with loyalty to my teachers in the public ordination. And I really feel that. And I feel it how I'd like to explain this is that with people who are very close to Padmavajra, who know him as well as I do, I feel I could talk freely and openly. Like if I have a difficulty with Padmavajra, I don't necessarily need to talk to him about it. There are certain people, they're mainly in the Padmaloka community, like Surata or Aryapala or Kamin and so on. But it's like the further away we go from that, the kind of the more steadfast, even fiercer, my loyalty is that I... for example, where I was at the chairman's meeting and someone was saying to me, oh, you know, Padmavajra this, and I'm like, do you really know Padmavajra? It's like, the, you know, if they don't know him very well, I will not have that kind of conversation about him. At least I'll try not to. I think what I want to say is that I do feel happy to have that in the context, certainly in the context of Padmaloka, you know, to have a kind of... I mean... it's usually in the context of like, how can we help him? To be honest, I've got very little that I would moan or whinge or complain about. It's usually in that kind of context. What can we do for him? The next thing I want to say is, as someone to serve. I mean, Padmavajra talked about this in relation to Bhante, and it's certainly important to me that I see Padmavajra as someone I can serve. I mean, there's a very kind of day-to-day level to this, in that I make him breakfast and, you know, go up to his room and so on, and obviously I have to enjoy it myself, making some nice scrambled eggs and a nice pot of coffee. I'd be rude not to enjoy it myself. But also, you know, in other ways as well, I mean, it's great that Padmavajra doesn't drive. It gives me and others the opportunity to drive him places. You know, sometimes into town. I've also done road trips with him. I've been down to Bristol to do public ordinations a few years ago. Fantastic. I love going on road trips. You know, he's a great travel friend. Also, just in a kind of wider, broader context at Padmaloka, it's almost as if, especially coming back now and having a position of responsibility here, being the chairman, I see one of my ways in which I serve Padmaloka is Padmavajra is by acting as confidently as I can, as though I'm being a kind of safe pair of hands, because I know that will make him not worry so much about Padmaloka and that kind of thing. I take that quite seriously. There's also something I want to just relate as well. A very interesting time in our relationship was when I left Padmaloka the first time round. Because I went to Padmavajra, I'd been here 5 years or so, and I said, look, I think I'd like to leave next year. And he said a brilliant thing to me. It's similar to the example that he gave about Bhante to him, but what he said to me was, I think it's too early for you to leave, but I'll support whatever decision you make. I mean, there's something there, so that if he just left it at the first bit, and I decide to leave, I mean, it puts us in a bit of a difficult position in a way. Or I just do as he says, of course. But he wanted to give me my own free will to make the decision. So he gave me his opinion, and also he said, I'll support you with whatever decision you make. And I did leave. I mean, I did leave, the following year. I kind of held that, what he'd said, and I made my own sort of assessment of it in a way. I mean, at the same time, 3 years later, he asked me if I'd come back, and I said yes. So I've got three others I just want to mention before finishing. The next one is, it's a bit of a mouthful, as a gateway into the transcendental hierarchy of being. I mean, in a sense, you could say, well, he gave me my mantra and sadhana practice, but I also, I do a little meditation sometimes in which, it's a bit like doing a kind of guru yoga, but it's just it's not a practice I've been given. I just made it up myself. Very simple kind of little meditation stroke reflection where I imagine Padmavajra in front of me, and then above him there's Bhante, and then above him there's Dade Rinpoche. I mean, Dade Rinpoche is there in particular because we have his relics in the stupa here, and I just feel a close connection with Dade Rinpoche. Above Dado Rinpoche, Avalokiteshvara, which is the sadhana that Padmavajra gave me. Above Avalokiteshvara, Amitabha, and above Amitabha, Shakyamuni Buddha. So I just do that as a, like a little meditation sometimes. Just you know, some, I don't usually do it in formal sitting meditation. It would just be like, you know, as I'm stirring that pan of eggs or something. you know, and I kind of feel, so I do see, you know, it's a kind of, a, there's a gateway there, if you like. I like using that word. The next one is as an exemplar. And exemplification, I think it's a very interesting term, and certainly my understanding of it comes from, I mean, actually comes from Padmavajra, one of the retreats that I did with you last year. We were talking about it. And exemplification doesn't mean exemplifying sort of perfect moral behaviour. What it means is exemplifying effort and struggle, if you like. That's what it means. That's what it really means. I mean, there was a bit more to it, but, you know, that's what I came away with, if you like, and when we would... And, I mean, that's what Padmavajra does, I mean, consistently. You know, he's in how he lives here and how he communicates with people. And I think more than anything, it's in this form of what I see him exemplifying that is how I have learnt about the what you might call the ethos or the spirit of our movement, you know, and Sangharakshita's vision for what a spiritual community is, and how Padmavajra carries that out, if you like, in his daily life. And I think, just before I'll finish with the last one, but just before that, so I think that it's interesting that although, you know, he is a teacher and he's given me things, it's almost like because I have these different ways of relating to him, especially this idea of a friend and a teacher and an exemplar, that that somehow has been important in my own process of integration and of how I relate to men and more experienced men. So in a way, in our friendship, I mean, you know, Padmavajra kind of sets the agenda. I mean, there is a sense in which it's a, you know... It's not far from being a peer friendship. We often talk about football and, you know, and this and that, and just like people and problems in the order. And, you know, and I feel, you know, it's just quite a sort of, you know, it can be a conversation that you could, you know, you could have with any number of friends. But there's also, you know, he has a lot of demands on his time. And I feel that, you know, if he wants to come and ask me something particular or to do something particular, I will do it in that sense of serving him as well. So it's like having, it's like holding that, holding this idea of someone who you serve, who's a teacher, but is also a friend who you can sort of play around with. And I think it's very important. I think it's fantastic, actually, having men that you can relate to on those different kinds of levels. I think, I mean, it's been very, very important to me. The very last thing I wanted to say, well, it's an example of his exemplification again, but and he mentioned it in talking about Bhante. But it's what I really have learned from him is that what I see him doing is continually creating spiritual community. And I've come to see via Padmavajra, via Aloka, via Bhante, that this is the most important activity that I would say any of us can do. In fact, I would go as far as to say, if you're ever stuck for what you need to do in your spiritual life, just think of that. How to create spiritual community in whatever way, shape, form. It doesn't necessarily mean setting up a, you know, like a house or whatever, but just like your connection, basically creating an environment or environments which are conducive to ethics, meditation, friendship and reflection. And that's what I think above all else, that's what I see Padmavajra doing, and that's what I've enjoyed in living and working with him. Thank you.